Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the Pantograph for Monday, February 3rd, 2025. I'm going to start today with local and national news and then work my way to sports in the second half of the reading. Today, I don't believe we have any obituaries today in the Pantograph. I'm going to start with the front page. We have a very large feature photo here. With the headline, 20 over 60 who make Bloomington Normal better. And there's a photo here of Faith in Action volunteer Ken Holcomb opening the door for George Cole on Monday, January 27th at the Lafayette Apartments in Bloomington. And the little subhead reads, Faith in Action introducing awards to honor volunteers. And this is by Brendan Dennison, and I'll begin. Bloomington Normal's Faith in Action is commemorating its 20th anniversary by uplifting 20 individuals who are bettering their communities in many ways. The inaugural 20 over 60 awards are now open for nominations. In an interview with the Pantograph, Executive Director Darla Heath said Faith in Action got its start in Bloomington Normal with just a spiral notebook to jot down where clients needed them. Among a host of services, the organization facilitates rides to medical appointments for people over 60 via a network of volunteers. Heath said the 20 over 60 honors were inspired by a similar awards program at a nonprofit where she once worked in Kansas City. It was a lovely event, Heath said, while adding it had sought 70 honorees over age 70. The numbers for Bloomington Normal's Faith in Action's 20 awards are tailored more for the same group the organization serves in McLean County. When sharing the awards format from Kansas City with her colleagues at the Normal nonprofit, Heath said they thought, wouldn't it be great to recognize people who are over 60, who are vibrant and contributing to the community in many ways? Heath said people are asked to nominate by February 15th a person age 60 or older who lives in McLean County, and a committee will review and select the top 20. Honorees will be recognized with a cocktail party at 4:30 p.m. April 29th at Rob Dobbs Restaurant and Bar in Bloomington. The committee will be looking for people who have made a positive impact on the county through their professional, volunteer, philanthropic, or community activities. Someone who's made their mark in the area, Heath said. Nominations can be made online by anyone through visiting Faith in Action's website at bn-fia.org/event/20over60. Nominators will be asked why their nominee should be recognized, what accomplishment the nominee has made, and how they're contributing to life in McLean County. The award aims to show that whether people are working or volunteering, life goes on even when you age a little bit, said Heath. Heath said she's already in discussions about doing the awards on a yearly basis. There are a few examples of encouraging volunteer actions right at home in Faith in Action. When asked to provide an example, Heath said, "We heard from a woman who was very down in the dumps. She did not want to go to physical therapy. It was painful. Although it would have been much easier to just stay home," Heath said the woman's outlook started to look up. She said the people that drove her to therapy were so kind and upbeat and encouraging that she started looking forward to her physical therapy appointments. And that's one of the things we want, is connection and to encourage. Heath said anyone who's doing these kinds of things in the community would be a perfect 20 over 60 nomination. Heath said health and connection are two big ones at Faith in Action. One way her organization works to connect people is through organizing volunteers to drive people to their medical appointments. Heath said they offer transportation to appointments in Bloomington Normal and outside of the Twin Cities if their specialty isn't available here in town. That means their volunteers have gone to Chicago, Indianapolis, Champaign, Peoria, and Springfield to help meet their clients' needs. Other services Faith in Action offers include taking people over age 60 grocery shopping or getting their groceries for them, light home maintenance, and having volunteers do friendly visits or make friendly phone calls. Sometimes loneliness can be a big factor for people who are homebound, he said. While Faith in Action started out serving residents only in the Twin Cities, he said they now help people in Hudson, Shenandoah, Lexington, Towanda, Downs, Leroy, and Ellsworth. These service expansions were made possible through partnering with area churches and civic organizations, she said, because they need volunteers in those towns to be able to bring people to appointments, which are usually in Bloomington. In 2024, Heath said Faith in Action served close to 400 people, noting many take several rides per week. She said quite a few care receivers need dialysis 3 times a week. Others are going to primary care, physical therapy, cancer treatment, and dental, vision, and mental health appointments. They also offer a monthly quality of life ride, Heath said, where clients can request a non-medical destination. The most popular is the hairdresser, she said, adding they're trying to help care receivers as best as they can. Our goal is to help people remain independent and in their home for as long as possible, Heath said. She said they've since upgraded their technology from spiral notebooks. Heath noted volunteers independently enter... She said that since they've upgraded their technology from spiral notebooks, Heath noted volunteers independently enter their availability on the organization's digital scheduling platform. During a January 23rd interview, Teresa Dooley of Bloomington was taking calls and jotting down appointments for care receivers as Faith in Action volunteer, as a Faith in Action volunteer on its transportation desk. Dooley said volunteers can also help fold newsletters and mailings for event planning. Some volunteer sessions are slow, Dooley said, and other days you can't pick calls up fast enough. She said clients are happy to speak with their volunteers, while adding their care receivers are all grateful for their service. You know you're going to be talking to a happy voice on the other end of the line, Dooley said. Moving on the front page of the Pantograph, we have a story focused, kind of a more national story from the Associated Press on, with the headline, Fast Food is a Staple of American Culture, but Some of Its Workers Struggle to Survive. And this is by Claire Savage of the Associated Press. The only moment Tiana Yeldell has to herself is when she's sleeping, and that doesn't happen much. The 44-year-old single mom of three works 80-hour weeks to provide for her children, ages 8, 14, and 18. During the day, she's a driver for Pizza Hut, where she earns $9.50 an hour before tips. At night, she cleans trains for Houston's metro system, where she earns about $17 an hour. The times that she pulls both shifts, Yeldell sleeps for just 2 to 3 hours before getting her kids up and ready for school. Then she does it all over again. Yeldell is among the millions of fast food workers across the U.S. scraping to get by. About two-thirds of them are women, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and many are supporting their families on minimum wages set at the federal government's floor of $7.25 an hour. Fast food workers are disproportionately Hispanic, making up 24.6% of the industry's workforce, compared with 18.8% of the overall workforce. And more than half of all U.S. fast food workers are 20 or older. President Donald Trump, who worked at a fry station at a McDonald's in Pennsylvania while on the campaign trail last year, acknowledged that the federal minimum wage is very low and he would consider raising it, but that doing so would be complicated. Meanwhile, a growing number of states have pushed to increase their minimum wage in the face of record-high inflation in recent years. For example, California, which has one of the highest costs of living in the country, in April raised wages for fast food workers specifically to $20 an hour from $16 an hour. By the end of this year, 23 states and 65 cities and counties will raise their minimum wage floors, according to a December 2024 National Employment Law Project report that combed through legislation across the country. but not Texas, where Yaldell and her family live. It's one of 20 states at the $7.25 federal minimum wage floor, and that rate hasn't budged since 2009. Democratic lawmakers in Texas have repeatedly proposed legislation to raise the minimum wage in the state to no avail. Preemption laws, which exist in Texas and many other states, block cities and counties from adopting their own minimum wage laws, presenting another barrier. Today, a living wage for one adult raising three children in the Houston metro area is $57.65 an hour, according to MIT's living wage calculator. For Yaldell, it's not possible to get by on her fast food job alone, which is why she must work a second job. Still wearing her visor and gray no one out pizzas, the Hut shirt, she slumps sideways after a recent work shift. She takes a moment to rest before changing into Looney Tunes sweatpants and a yellow t-shirt, scooping fajitas onto plates for the kids' dinner, and packing up the leftovers. "I don't want to work two jobs. I'm really tired, but I have to because the jobs don't pay enough," Yaldell said. "I would not be able to provide a roof over my kids' head." The Associated Press reached out to Pizza Hut as well as its parent company, Yum Brands, for comment on wages for fast food workers, but did not get a response. Wages are just one of many issues fast food workers face. Unpredictable hours, limited access to paid sick leave, and challenging customer interactions all shape their experiences, said Daniel Schneider, co-director and co-founder of the SHIFT Project, a joint Harvard and University of California San Francisco project researching the conditions of service sector work. Wage theft and other law violations are also common in the industry, added labor scholar David Madland, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. "The fast food industry is notorious for low pay and poor working conditions," Madland said. "It's seen as almost a sort of typical throwaway job that policy has cared very little about." Yaldell's Pizza Hut deliveries sometimes go on until 11 p.m. She carries a knife in her pocket as well as a flashlight to keep her safe. Despite the challenges, Yaldell maintains a positive outlook about her job, which she started about a year and a half ago as a delivery driver and has since learned to do pretty much everything at her Fresno, Texas store. "Pizza Hut is a really easy job, and the job is only hard if you make it hard," she said. "And I'm a fast learner, so it doesn't bother me." Contrast Texas to California, which now has the highest fast food minimum wage of any state since lawmakers passed a minimum $20 an hourly wage for those workers. Angelica Hernandez, 51, who has worked at various McDonald's restaurants for 20 years and now works for a Monterey Park location in Los Angeles County, said the raise helped her pay rent and bills on time, avoid late fees, and buy a bit more at the grocery store. But much of the increase was swallowed by a recent $200 rent increase. "We need a little more to be able to save money and buy clothes without being tight every 2 weeks or have to use credit," she said. Critics of the new law say continuing to increase the minimum wage is not the answer, arguing that it has raised prices and reduced job opportunities for young people, pinching franchisees in an industry with already slim margins. "When you see a spike in operating costs pretty dramatically in a short period of time, it creates challenges," said Jot Condi, president and CEO of the California Restaurant Association, which opposed the law. He added that franchisees, who are essentially small business owners, are most harmed. But a September report from the University of California, Berkeley's Institute for Research on Labor and Employment, called the effects of the higher wages benign and found the policy did not affect employment adversely and increased prices about 3.7% or about 15 cents on a $4 hamburger. For Yaldell, increasing the minimum wage in Texas would be more fair. "If other states could change, y'all can change too," she said. Moving on the final story on the front page here is about dogs, and with the headline, "Dogs paired with providers at hospitals help ease staff and patient stress." And this is by John Daly of Colorado Public Radio and KFF Health News. There's a photo here of Pepe, a yellow Labrador and an official canine companion, sitting on the lap of OBGYN Christina Fraser in November at the HCA Health One Rose Medical Center in Denver. On the third floor of HCA Health One Rose Medical Center, there's a flurry of activity in the labor and delivery unit. "There's a lot of action up here. It can be very stressful at times," said Christina Fraser, an OBGYN in blue scrubs. "Nurses wheel a very pregnant mom past." "We're going to bring a baby into this world safely," Fraser said, "and off we go." She said she felt ready in part due to a calming moment she had a few minutes earlier with some canine colleagues. A pair of dogs, tails wagging, came to a nearby nursing station, causing about a dozen medical professionals to melt into a collective puddle of affection. A yellow lab named Peppy showered Fraser in nuzzles and kisses. "I don't know if a human baby smells as good as that puppy breath," Fraser said, as her colleagues laughed. "The dogs aren't visitors. They work here, too, specifically for the benefit of the staff. I feel like that dog just walks in and everybody takes a big deep breath and gets down on the ground and has a few moments of just decompressing," Fraser said. "It's great. It's amazing." Hospital staffers who work with the dogs say there's virtually no bite risk with the carefully trained Labradors, the preferred breed for this work. The dogs are kept away from allergic patients and washed regularly to prevent germs from spreading, and people must wash their hands before and after petting them. Doctors and nurses face a growing mental health crisis driven by their experiences at work. They and other healthcare colleagues face high rates of depression, anxiety, stress, suicidal ideation, and burnout. Nearly half of health workers reported often feeling burned out in 2022, an increase from 2018, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The percentage of healthcare workers who reported harassment at work more than doubled over that four-year period. Advocates for the presence of dogs in hospitals see the animals as one thing that can help. That includes Peppy's handler, Susan Ryan, an emergency physician at Rose. Ryan said years working as an emergency room doctor left her with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. "I was just messed up and I knew it," said Ryan, who isolated more at home and didn't want to engage with friends. "I shoved it all in. I think we all do." She said doctors and other providers can be good at hiding their struggles because they have to compartmentalize. "How else can I go from a patient who had a cardiac arrest, deal with the family members telling them that, and go to a room where another person is mad that they've had to wait for 45 minutes for their ear pain? And I have to flip that switch." To cope with her symptoms of PTSD, Ryan started doing therapy with horses. However, she couldn't have a horse in her backyard, so she got a Labrador. Ryan received training from a national service dog group called Canine Companions, becoming the first doctor trained by the group to have a facility dog in an emergency room. Canine Companions has graduated more than 8,000 service dogs. The Rose Medical Center gave Ryan approval to bring a dog to work during her ER shifts. Her colleagues said that they are delighted that a dog is part of their work life. "When I have a bad day at work and I come to Rose and Peppy is here, my day is going to be a lot made better," EMT Jasmine Richardson said. "And if I have a patient who's having a tough day, Peppy just knows how to light up the room." Nursing supervisor Eric Valencourt agreed, calling Peppy joyful. Ryan had another dog, Wynn, working with her during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. She said she thinks Wynn made a huge difference. "It saved people," she said. "We had new nurses that had never seen death before, and now they're seeing a COVID death, and we were worried sick. We were dying. She said her hospital system lost a couple of physicians to suicide in the past 2 years, which HCA confirmed to KFF Health News and NPR. Ryan hopes the canine connection can help with trauma. "Anything that brings you back to the present time helps ground you again. A dog can be that calming influence," she said. "You can get down on the ground, pet them, and just get calm. She said research showed the advantages. For example, one review of dozens of original studies on human-animal interactions found benefits for a variety of conditions, including behavioral and mood issues and physical symptoms of stress. Rose's president and CEO, Casey Guber, became such a believer in the canine connection, he got his own trained dog to bring to the hospital, a black Labrador retriever mix named Ralphie. She wears a badge, Chief Dog Officer. Guber said she's a big morale booster. Phenomenal, he said. It's not uncommon to see a surgeon coming down to our administration office and rolling on the ground with Ralphie, or one of our nurses taking Ralphie out for a walk in the park. I'm going to move on to page A2, and we have some local briefs here, and two short ones. And the first is has the headline, Man Killed in Crash Near Mall Identified. A 32-year-old man from Bloomington has been identified as the person killed in a single vehicle crash Thursday evening near Regency Drive and Canterbury Court. Alberto A. Sanchez Hernandez was pronounced deceased at the scene of the crash, according to a Saturday statement from McLean County Coroner Kathleen Yoder. Preliminary autopsy opinion indicates Sanchez Hernandez died from multiple blunt injuries when his vehicle hit a fixed object in the area, Yoder said. He was the driver and only occupant of the vehicle. Toxicology testing is pending. Police had been called at 6:21 p.m. Thursday for a crash involving one sedan in the area just southwest of Bloomington's Eastland Mall. The crash remains under investigation by the Bloomington Police Department, McLean County Accident Reconstruction Team, and the McLean County Coroner's Office. Our next very short brief has the headline, To Join Woodford County Soil Water Board. Mary Jo Adams and Mark Rock were recently elected to the Woodford County Soil and Water Conservation District Board. An election of directors was held Tuesday, January 28th. Both Adams and Rock will serve two-year terms, a news release said. There are a few short news clips here for veterans, Veterans Corner, starting with Four Chaplains Event 2025. And this is these are by Jerry A. Vogler. And so I'll begin this short one on the Four Chaplains event. Later this morning, a very important ceremony will take place at Evergreen Cemetery in Bloomington. The American Legion Honor Guard will conduct a ceremony recognizing the four chaplains in World War II who gave up their lives so that other soldiers on the doomed troop transport might live. The significance of the ceremony and what the four chaplains did on that fateful night of February 3rd, 1943, goes far beyond the sacrifices these chaplains exemplified. Remember that during that time in our history, the relationships between Catholics, Protestants, and Jews were thin. Few people outside Eastern Europe were aware of the Holocaust going on there. These four great gentlemen showed the world that the one God, their love of mankind, and the religious groups they represented could not only be together, but showed that the unity of good people and people of good faith could work together for the far greater common good. The ceremony will commence at 11 a.m. Monday, February 3rd at Evergreen Cemetery inside the mausoleum. There will be an invocation, a guest speaker, a three-volley rifle salute, taps, and the bagpiper playing Amazing Grace. Come and recognize what four chaplains did 82 years ago, lest we forget. And next we have Bowling for Vets fundraiser. The second annual Bowling for Vets fundraising event will be March 23rd at Pheasant Lane's Bowling Alley in Bloomington. The event commences at 10 a.m. The participation fee is $25 per person. Included with the fee is 9-pin, no-tap, 3 games, free shoe rental, and prizes for 300 games. Registration is now open and ends March 15th. All veterans will be recognized, and a Medal of Honor recipient will be attending the event. You can contact Rick Parker at bowlergolf@yahoo.com. And next we have VA ends DEI. The Department of Veterans Affairs announced on January 27th that it has completed its initial implementation of the recent executive order to end DEI, or Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, programs and processes within the federal government. To date, the VA has placed nearly 60 employees who had been solely focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion activities on paid administrative leave. Additionally, VA has identified several contracts for DEI-related training, materials, and other consulting services, which total more than $6.1 million. VA stated that in coming weeks and months, VA will be working to reallocate these resources to better support the veterans, families, and caregivers and survivors the department exists to serve. Our next clip, a little blurb here, has the headline, Did You Know? There has been a long tradition of displaying the American flag at sporting events, parades, and other public events by carrying the flag horizontally. Often those carrying the flag were active duty service members. It might come as a surprise to you, but U.S. service members were not technically allowed to unfurl giant U.S. flags at major events, despite the practice's status as a staple of many pre-game ceremonies. A February 2023 Defense Department memo reminded troops that the flag should never be carried flat or horizontally. The Pentagon, as of January 10th, is tossing that restriction. A new memo from DOD indicates that service members can freely unfurl Old Glory, regardless of its size or position, at eligible public sporting and other community events, provided that such displays are done in a respectful manner. The laws governing display of the flag for U.S. Code Section 8 say the flag should be carried always aloft and free. For most Americans, the flag code is more of a code of etiquette, and the Supreme Court struck down flag protection laws in 1990s, specifically in the United States, versus Eichmann, which protected violations of flag etiquette as free speech. The important takeaway from all of this is that the flag is a symbol of our nation and always should be treated with respect that it and the nation for which it stands deserves. And here's our quote of the day. I've heard and read that there are two Americas, the elite and everyone else. The current mantra says only the elite have the education and experience necessary to run our government, and this is a new phenomenon only in current times. The following quote needs a little help in crushing both the theory of the elite and that our problem is brand new. And here's the quote. The American elite is almost beyond redemption. Moral relativism has set in so deeply that the gilded classes have become incapable of discerning right from wrong. Everything can be explained away, especially by journalists. Life is one great moral mush, sophistry washed down with Chardonnay. The ordinary citizens, thank goodness, still adhere to absolutes. It is they who have saved the Republic from creeping degradation while their betters were derelict. And that the quote is from Charles Dickens. And the writer of these blurbs is Jerry Vogler, who's superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission. I'm going to round this half off with today's flick fact on page A2. And the question is, it's true or false. Legislators in Springfield once suggested converting Illinois State University into a psychiatric hospital. And the answer, well, that's true. In 1875, lawmakers debated whether Illinois had too many colleges and not enough facilities for people with mental illness. A proposal was made to convert ISNU, which is Illinois State Normal University, into an asylum. Fortunately, ISNU President Richard Edwards successfully argued to keep it as a college. Also, there are a few historic tidbits here, including 25 years ago today, shoppers were able to get a sneak peek in the Gap and Gap Kids store in Bloomington's Eastland Mall on February 2nd, actually. But looks like the store is opened a week later. I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Monday, February 3rd, very shortly. Please stay tuned.